Chapter 48 Leave Takings. Once she was back in the wagon, Nynaeve changed into a decent dress with a few exasperated mutters for having to undo one set of buttons and do up another by herself. The plain gray wool, fine and well cut, yet hardly elaborate, would pass without comment almost anywhere, but it was decidedly warmer. Still, it felt good to be decently garbed again, and somehow odd, as if she were wearing too many clothes. It must be the heat. Quickly she knelt in front of the small brick stove with its tin chimney and opened the iron door on their valuables. The twisted stone ring was fast nestled into her belt pouch beside Lan's heavy signet ring and her gold great serpent. The small gilded coffer containing the gems Amathera had given her went into the leather scrip with the pouches of herbs taken from Rhonda Macura in Mardison, and the small mortar and pestle for preparing them. She fingered through the latter just to remind herself what each contained, from heel all to that dreadful fork-tongue root. The letters of rites went in as well, and three of the six purses, none quite as fat as it had been after paying the menagerie's way to Gildon. Luca might not be interested in his 100 marks, but he had had no qualms about collecting his expenses. One of the letters authorizing the bearer to do whatever she wished in the name of the Ammerlin seat joined the rings. No more than vague rumors of some sort of trouble in Tarvalin had reached Samara. She might find a use for it, even with Swan Sanchez's signature. The dark wooden box she left where it sat, next to three of the purses, as well as the rough jute bag containing the eidom, that she certainly had no wish to touch, and the silver arrow Elaine had found the night of the calamitous encounter with Mogadin. For a moment she frowned at the arrow, contemplating Mogadin. It was best to do whatever was necessary to avoid her. It was. I bested her once, and had been hung up like a sausage in the kitchen the second time. If not for Birgitta, she made her own choice. The woman had said so, and it was true. I could defeat her again. I could. But if I failed... If she failed. She was only trying to avoid the wash leather purse stuffed right to the back, and she knew it. Yet there was not a hair's difference for ugliness between the purse and the thought of losing to Mogadin again. Drawing a deep breath, she gingerly reached in and took it up by the drawstrings, and knew she had been wrong. Evil seemed to bathe her hand, stronger than ever, as if the Dark One really was trying to break through the Quendiyar seal inside. Better to dwell all day on defeat by Mogadin. There was a world of difference between thought and reality. It had to be imagination. There had been no such feeling in Tanchico, but she wished she could let Elaine carry that too, or leave it there. Stop being foolish, she told herself firmly. It holds the Dark One's prison shut. You are just letting your fancies run wild. But she still dropped it like a weak dead rat onto the red dress Luca had had made, then wrapped and tied the thing securely with more than a little haste. The silken parcel went into the middle of a bundle of clothes she was taking with her, inside her good gray traveling cloak. A few inches distance was enough to take away the sensation of dark bleakness, but she still wanted to wash her hand. If only she did not know it was there. She was being foolish. Elaine would laugh at her, and Birgitta as well, and rightly. Actually, the clothes she wanted to keep made 2 packages, and she regretted every stitch she had to leave behind. Even the low-cut blue silk. Not that she ever wanted to wear anything like it again. She did not intend to touch the red dress, certainly, until she handed the intact packet to an Aes Sedai in Salidar. But she could not help totting up the cost of clothes, horses, and wagons abandoned since leaving Tanchico. And the coach, and the barrels of dye. Even Elaine would have winced if she had ever thought of it. That young woman believed there would always be coin when she reached into her purse. She was still making the second bundle when Elaine returned and silently changed into a blue silk dress. Silently, except for mutters when she had to double her arms behind her to fasten the buttons. Nynaeve would have helped, had she been asked, but since she was not, she examined the other woman for bruises while she changed. She thought she had heard a scream only minutes before Elaine arrived, and if she and Birgitta had actually come to blows, she was not certain she was glad to find none. A river boat would be just as confining as this wagon in its own way, and less than pleasant if the two women were at one another's throats. but then again it might have helped had they worked off some of their beastly tempers. Elaine said not a word while she gathered her own belongings, not even when Nynaeve asked quite amiably where she had gone herring off to as if she had sat on a cockle-burr. That got only a raised chin and a chilly stare, as though the girl thought she was already on her mother's throne. Sometimes Elaine was even more silent, in a way that said far more than words could. Finding three purses remaining, she paused before taking them, and the temperature in the wagon lowered considerably, though the purses were only her share. Nynaeve was tired of the carping over how she doled out coins. Let the woman watch them dribble away, and realize there might be no more for some time. When Elaine realized the ring was gone, though, and the dark box still sitting there, Elaine hefted the box and opened the lid, pursing her lips as she studied the contents, the other two Turangrial they had carried all the way from Tyr. A small iron disc, worked on both sides with a tight spiral, and a narrow plaque 5 inches long, seemingly amber, yet harder than steel, and with a sleeping woman somehow carved inside it. Either could be used to enter Telairunriod, though not so easily or so well as could the ring. To use either it was necessary to channel spirit, the sole one of the 5 powers that could be channeled in sleep. It had seemed only right to Nynaeve, leaving them for Elaine, since she was taking charge of the ring. Closing the box with a sharp click, Elaine stared at her, absolutely expressionless, then stuffed it into one of her bundles alongside the silver arrow. Her silence was thunderous. Elaine also made 2 bundles, but hers were larger. She left nothing out except the spangled coats and breeches. Nynaeve refrained from suggesting that she had overlooked them. She should have, with the sulking that was going on, but she knew how to promote harmony. She limited herself to 1 sniff when Elaine ostentatiously added the eidom to her things, though from the look she got in return, you would have thought she had made her objections known at length. By the time they left the wagon, the quiet could have been chipped and used to chill wine. Outside, the men were ready, and muttering to themselves and throwing impatient looks at her and Elaine. It was hardly fair. Galad and Uno had nothing to prepare. Tom's flute and harp hung on his back in leather cases, along with a small bundle, and Juelin, notched sword-breaker at his belt and leaning on his head-high staff, wore an even smaller bundle neatly tied. Men were willing to wear the same clothes until they rotted off. Of course, Birgitta was ready too, bow in hand, quiver at her hip, and a cloak-wrapped bundle at her feet not much smaller than one of Elaine's. Nynaeve would not have put it past Birgitta to have Luca's dresses in there, but it was what she wore that gave a moment's pause. Her divided skirts could have been the voluminous trousers she had worn in Telairunriod, except for being more gold than yellow and not being gathered at the ankles. The short blue coat was identical in cut. The mystery of where the garments had come from was solved when Clarine scurried up, chattering that she had taken too long, with 2 more of the skirts and another coat to fold into Brigitte's bundle. She stayed to say how sorry she was that they were leaving the show, and she was not the only one to take a few moments from the bustle of hitching horses and packing up. Aludra came with wishes for a safe journey, wherever they were going, in her Tarabonar accents, and with 2 more boxes of her fire sticks. Nynaeve tucked them into her scrip with a sigh. She had made a point of leaving the others behind, and Elaine had pushed them to the back of the shelf behind a sack of beans when she thought Nynaeve was not looking. Petra offered to help escort them to the river, pretending not to see his wife's eyes tighten with concern, and so did the Chavanas and Kin and Bari, the jugglers, though when Nynaeve told them there was no need and Petra frowned, they could barely hide their relief. She had to speak quickly, for Galad and the other men looked on the point of accepting. Surprisingly, even Latel appeared briefly with words of regret, smiles, and eyes that said she would carry their bundles if it saw them gone any sooner. Nynaeve was surprised Sarandon did not come, though in a way she was just as glad. Elaine might get on famously with the woman, but since the incident where she had been assaulted, Nynaeve had felt a tension whenever she was around her, perhaps the more because Sarandon gave no outward sign of the same. Luca himself was the last, thrusting a handful of pitiful, drought-dwarfed wildflowers at Nynaeve. The light alone knew where he had found them, with protestations of undying love, extravagant praises for her beauty, and dramatic vows to find her again if he had to travel to the corners of the world. She was not sure which made her cheeks grow hotter, but her frosty stare wiped the grin from Julin's face and astonishment from Uno's. Whatever Tom and Galad thought, they had enough sense to keep their features smooth. She could not make herself look at Birgitta or Elaine. The worst was that she had to stand there and listen, wilted flowers drooping over her hand, her face growing redder. Trying to send him away with a flea in his ear would likely only have sparked him to greater efforts, and given the others more fodder than they already had. She very nearly heaved a sigh of relief when the idiot man finally bowed himself away in elaborate flourishes of his cape. She held on to the flowers, striding ahead of the others so she did not have to see their faces, and angrily shoving bundles back into place when they shifted, until she was out of sight of the wagons around the canvas wall. Then she threw the bedraggled blossoms down so violently that Rhaegan and the rest of the rough-clad Shinarans, squatting halfway across the meadow to the road, exchanged glances. Each had a blanket-wrapped bundle on his back, small, of course, alongside his sword, but they were hung about with enough water bottles to last for days, and every third man had a pot or kettle dangling somewhere. Fine. If there was cooking to be done, let them do it. Not waiting for them to decide whether she was safe to approach, she stalked out to the dirt road alone. Valen Luca was the source of her fury, humiliating her that way. She should have thumped his head and the Dark One take what anyone thought, but its target was Lan Mandragoran. Lan had never given her flowers. Not that that was of any account. He had expressed his feelings in words deeper and more heartfelt than Valen Luca could ever manage. She had meant every word to Luca, but if Lan said he was going to carry you off, threats would never stop him. Channeling would not stop him unless you managed it before he turned your brain and your knees to jelly with kisses. Still, flowers would have been nice. Nicer than another explanation of why their love could never be, certainly. Men and their word. Men and their honor. Wedded to death, was he? Him and his personal war with the Shadow. He was going to live, he was going to wed her, and if he thought differently on either point, she intended to set him straight. There was only the small matter of his bond to Moiraine to deal with. She could have screamed in frustration. She was 100 paces down the road before the others caught up, glancing at her sideways. Elaine only sniffed loudly while struggling to readjust the 2 large bundles on her back. She would have to take everything, but Birgitta strode along pretending to speak under her breath, yet quite audibly muttering about women who rushed off like carpen girls leaping from a river cliff. Nynaeve ignored them equally. The men spread out, Galad in the lead flanked by Tom and Julin, the Shinarans in a long file to either side, wary eyes searching every withered bush and fold in the ground. Walking in the middle of them, Nynaeve felt foolish. You would have thought they expected an army to rise up out of the ground. You would have thought she and the other 2 women were helpless, especially when the Shinarans silently followed Uno's lead and unlimbered their swords. Why, there was not a human being in sight. Even the shanty villages appeared abandoned. Galad's blade remained in its scabbard, but Julin began hefting his thumb-thick staff instead of using it for a walking stick, and knives appeared in Tom's hands and vanished, as if he was unconscious of what he was doing. Even Birgitta fitted an arrow to her bow. Nynaeve shook her head. It would take a brave mob to come in eye shot of this lot. Then they reached Samara, and she began to wish she had accepted Petra's offer, and the Chavanas, and anyone else's she could have found. The gates stood open and unguarded, and 6 black columns of smoke rose above the grey town walls. The streets beyond were still. Shattered glass from broken windows crunched underfoot. That was the only sound except for a distant buzz, like monstrous swarms of wasps scattered through the city. Furniture and bits of clothing littered the paving stones, pots and pottery, things dragged from shops and homes, whether by looters or by people fleeing, there was no way to tell. Not only property had been destroyed. In one place, a corpse in a fine green silk coat hung half out of a window, limp and unmoving. In another, a fellow garbed in rags dangled by his neck from the eaves of a tinsmith's shop. Sometimes, down a side street or alley, she caught a glimpse of what might have been discarded bundles of old clothes. She knew they were not. In one doorway, where the splintered door hung crazily by a single hinge, small flames licked up around a wooden staircase, smoke just beginning to trickle out. The street might be empty now, but whoever had done that was not long gone. Head swiveling, trying to watch every way at once, Nynaeve took a firm hold on her belt knife. Sometimes the angry buzz grew louder, a wordless, guttural roar of rage that seemed no more than one street over, and sometimes it faded to a dull murmur. Yet, when trouble came, it came suddenly and silently. The mass of men stalked around the next corner but one, like a pack of hunting wolves, jamming the street from side to side, soundless but for the thud of boots. The sight of Nynaeve and the others was a torch tossed into a haystack. There was no hesitation. As one, they surged forward, howling and rabid, waving pitchforks and swords, axes and clubs, anything that could be taken to hand for a weapon. Enough anger still clung in Nynaeve for her to embrace Saidar, and she did it without thinking, even before she saw the glow spring up around Elaine. There were a dozen ways she could halt this mob by herself, a dozen more she could destroy it if she chose, if not for the possibility of Mogadine. She was not sure whether the same thought held Elaine. She only knew that she hung on to her anger and the true source with equal fervor, and it was Mogadine more than the onrushing rabble that made it hard. She hung on to them and knew she dared do nothing, not if there was any other chance. Almost she wished she could cut the flows being woven by Elaine. There had to be some other chance. One man, a tall fellow in a ragged red coat that had belonged to someone else once by its green and gold embroidery, ran out in front of the others on long legs, shaking a wood axe overhead. Birgitta's arrow took him through one eye. He went down in a sprawling heap and was trampled by the others, all contorted faces and wordless screams. Nothing was going to stop them. With a wail, half outrage, half pure fear, Nynaeve jerked her belt knife free and at the same time prepared to channel. Like a wave striking boulders, the charge splintered on Shinaran steel. The top-knotted men, not much less ragged than those they fought, worked their two-handled swords methodically, craftsmen at their craft, and the onslaught went no farther than their thin line. Men fell screaming for the prophet, but more scrambled over them. Julin, the fool, was in that row, flat-topped conical cap perched on his dark head, thin staff a blur that deflected stabs, broke arms, and cracked skulls. Tom worked behind the line, his limp strong as he darted from place to place to confront the few who managed to wriggle through. Only a dagger in either hand, yet even swordsmen died on those blades. The gleeman's leathery face was grim, but when one bulky fellow in a blacksmith's leather vest nearly reached Elaine with his pitchfork, Tom snarled as viciously as any in the mob and very nearly cut the man's head off while slitting his throat. Through it all, Birgitta calmly shifted from spot to spot, every arrow finding an eye. Yet if they held the mob, it was Galad who broke them. He faced their charge as though awaiting the next dance at a ball, arms folded and unconcerned, not even bothering to bare his blade until they were almost on top of him. Then he did dance, all his grace turned in an instant to fluid death. He did not stand against them. He carved a path into their heart, a clear swath as wide as his sword's reach. Sometimes five or six men closed in around him with swords and axes and table legs for clubs, but only for the brief time it took them to die. In the end, all their rage, all their thirst for blood, could not face him. It was from him that the first ran, flinging away weapons, and when the rest fled, they divided around him. As they vanished back the way they had come, he stood 20 paces from anyone else, alone among the dead and the groans of the dying. Nynaeve shivered as he bent to clean his blade on a corpse's coat. He was graceful, even doing that. He was beautiful, even doing that. She thought she might sick up. She had no idea how long it had taken. Some of the Shinarans were leaning on their swords, panting, and eyeing Galad with a good deal of respect. Tom was bent over with one hand on his knee, trying to fend Elaine off with the other, while telling her he just had to catch his breath. Minutes? An hour? It could have been either. For once, looking at the injured men lying on the pavement here and there, the one crawling away, she felt no desire to heal, no pity at all. Not far off was a pitchfork where someone had flung it. A man's severed head was impaled on one tine, a woman's on another. All she felt was queasy, and grateful that it was not her head. That, and cold. "Thank you," she said aloud, to no one in particular and to everyone. "Thank you very much." The words grated a little. She did not like confessing something she had not been able to do for herself, but they were fervent. Then Birgitta nodded in acknowledgement, and Nynaeve had to struggle with herself. But the woman had done as much as anyone, considerably more than she herself. She thrust her belt knife back into its sheath. "You shot very well." With a wry grin, as if she knew exactly how difficult those words had been, Birgitta set about recovering her arrows. Nynaeve shuddered and tried not to watch. Most of the Shinarans had wounds, and Tom and Julin both wore their own blood in places. Miraculously, Galad was untouched, or perhaps not so miraculously, remembering how he had handled his sword. But manlike to the bitter end, every one of them insisted that his hurts were not serious. Even Uno said they had to keep moving, him with one arm hanging and a gash down the side of his face, whose scar would nearly mirror the first if it was not healed soon. In truth, she was not reluctant to go, despite telling herself that she should be seeing to injuries. Elaine put a supporting arm around Tom. He responded by refusing to lean on her and beginning to recite a tale in high chant, so flowery it was difficult to recognize the story of Kirukan, the beautiful soldier queen of the Trolloc Wars. "She had a temper like a boar caught in briars at the best," Birgitta said softly to no one in particular. "Not at all like anyone close by." Nynaeve ground her teeth. Catch her complimenting the woman again, no matter what she did. Come to think of it, any man in the Two Rivers could have shot as well at that range. Any boy. Rumbles followed them, distant roars from other streets, and often she had the feeling of eyes watching from one of the vacant glassless windows. But word must have spread, or else the watchers had seen what happened, because they saw no one else living until suddenly 2 dozen white cloaks stepped into the street in front of them, half with drawn bows, the rest with bared blades. The Shinarans' blades were up in a heartbeat. Quick words between Galad and a fellow with a grizzled face beneath his conical helmet passed them through, though the man did eye the Shinarans doubtfully, and Tom and Julin, and for that matter Birgitta. It was enough to rankle Nynaeve. All very well for Elaine to march along with her chin raised, ignoring the white cloaks as though they were servants, but Nynaeve did not like being taken for granted. The river was not far. Beyond a few small stone warehouses under slate roofs, the town's 3 stone docks barely reached water over the dried mud. A fat vessel with 2 masts sat low at the end of one. Nynaeve hoped there would be no problem obtaining separate cabins. She hoped it would not heave too badly. A small crowd huddled 20 paces from the dock, under the watchful eyes of 4 white-cloaked guards, nearly 12 men, mainly old and all ragged and bruised, and 2x as many women, most with 2 or 3 children clinging to them, some with a babe in arms beside. 2 more white cloaks stood right at the dock. The children hid their faces in their mother's skirts, but the adults gazed yearningly at the ship. The sight wrenched at Nynaeve's heart. She remembered the same gazes, many more of them, in Tanchico, people desperately hoping for a way to safety. She had not been able to do anything for those. Before she could do anything for these, Galad had seized her and Elaine by the arm and hustled them along the dock and down an unsteady gangplank. 6 more stern-faced men in white cloaks and burnished mail stood on the deck, watching a cluster of barefoot and mostly bare-chested men squatting in the bluff bows. It was close whether the captain at the foot of the plank gazed at the white cloaks more sourly, or at the motley party that trooped onto his ship. Agni Nerez was a tall, bony man in a dark coat, with ears that stood out and a dour cast to his narrow face. He paid no mind to the sweat rolling down his cheeks. "You paid me passage for 2 women. I suppose you want me to take the other wench and the men for free?" Birgitta eyed him dangerously, but he seemed not to see. "You shall have your fair money, my good captain," Elaine told him coolly. "As long as it's reasonable," Nynaeve said, and ignored Elaine's sharp glance. Nerez's mouth thinned, though it hardly seemed possible, and he addressed Galad again. "Then if you'll get your men off my craft, I'll sail. I like being here in daylight now less than ever." "As soon as you take your other passengers on," Nynaeve said, nodding to the people huddled ashore. Nerez looked for Galad only to find that he had moved away to speak with the other white cloaks, then eyed the folk ashore and spoke to the air above Nynaeve's head. "Any who can pay. Not many in that lot look like they can, and I could not take the lot if they could." She raised herself on tiptoe so he could not possibly miss her smile. It snapped his chin down into his collar. "Every last one of them, Captain, else I'll shave your ears off for you." The man's mouth opened angrily, then abruptly his eyes widened, staring past her. "All right," he said quickly, "but I expect some sort of payment, mind. I give alms on first day, and that's long past." Heels settling back to the deck, she looked over her shoulder suspiciously. Tom, Julin, and Uno stood there, blandly watching her and Nerez, as blandly as they could manage with Uno's features and blood all over their faces. Far too blandly. With a sharp sniff, she said, "I will see them all aboard before anybody touches a rope," and went in search of Galad. She supposed he deserved some thanks. He had thought what he was doing was the right thing. That was the trouble with the best of men. They always thought they were doing the right thing. Still, whatever the three had done, they had saved argument. She found him with Elaine, that handsome face painted with frustration. He brightened at the sight of her. "Nynaeve, I've paid your way as far as Boanda. That's only halfway to Altara, where the Bourne runs into the Eldar, but I could not afford to pay further. Captain Nerez took every copper in my purse, and I had to borrow besides. The fellow charges 10 prices. I'm afraid you will have to make your own way to Camelin from there. I truly am sorry."
"You have done quite enough already," Elaine put in, her eyes drifting toward the plumes of smoke rising above Samara.
"I gave my promise," he said, with a weary resignation. Plainly they had had the same exchange before Nynaeve came. Nynaeve managed to offer her thanks, which he dismissed graciously, but with a look as if she, too, did not understand, and she was more than ready to admit as much. He started a war to keep a promise. Elaine was right about that. It would be a war, if it was not already. Yet, with his men holding Nerez's ship, he would not demand a better price. It was Nerez's ship, and Nerez could charge as he chose, as long as he took Elaine and Nynaeve. It was true. Galad never counted the cost of doing right, not to himself or anyone else. At the gangplank he paused, staring at the town as if seeing the future.
"Stay clear of Randall Thor," he said bleakly. "He brings destruction. He will break the world again before he is done. Stay clear of him."
And he was trotting up to the dock, already calling for his armor. Nynaeve found herself sharing a wondering gaze with Elaine, though it quickly broke up in embarrassment. It was hard to share a moment like that with someone you knew might rake you with her tongue. At least, that was why she felt discomfited. Why Elaine should look flustered, she could not imagine, unless the woman was starting to come to her senses. Surely Galad did not suspect they had no intention of going to Camelin. Surely not. Men were never that perceptive. She and Elaine did not look at one another again for some time.